Okay, Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Memhei. And the last thing that we were learning about was the reinterpreted Maimer of Rav, in which it turns out that what Rav had actually said is that there is a specific length to the Veshet, there's an area that is kosher l'shchita, an area that's not kosher l'shchita, and that, in fact, he gave us the different, there were different shitas. He was talking about the way the Gemara came out up until the place where you find cilia at the bottom of the Veshet, but the Gemara said he was talking about a shor gadol, and therefore it extends upwards, possibly, because we also had Rav's Maimer that we had two possible readings of, that the area that is the last tefach of the veshet, as it gets close to the rumen, that area is called the keres hapnimi, which was one of the lashonis in Rav, and therefore we had to limit what Rav said to dafka shor that has cilia much further up than a small animal. You know, finami, that would be the keres hapnimi. So that's what we had learned yesterday, which brings us now to the prote dinim of the concept of a slit in the kana. So the question is, as we raised yesterday, various possibilities in which there was a sudden rip of the veshet. You know, returning back to the kana, we were talking about what's considered to be nidal de los simanim. If those simanim were still connected, it depends whether they were pulled by a ripping motion. It depends whether they were carefully, the bone of the jaw was carefully removed from the connective tissue, which we said was kosher. That's not even a problem. That's not called nidal de los simanim. And if something was carefully pulled away, and then it would have, in fact, a din of kashrus according to Shmuel. Now the question is, getting back to the actual dinim of the learning about the veshet, moving back to the kana. And the question is, what counts as a pesuka of rov of the kana? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, nikva kinafa mitzarfim l'ruba. Let's say that you have something that was holes that were like a sieve. So it means that there isn't really a... It means that there isn't really a place where we have a straight tear. And the question is, over here, the holes are still, there's a lot of holes, but they're not actually a straight hole. The question is, can you add them up? So Rav said, yes, you can add up that holes until you see that there's sufficient, that if you put them all in a single line, you would have a rove that was actually punctured. Masiv Rabbi Yirmiyah, as Rabbi Yirmiyah asked, when we add up holes, we don't add them up in terms of rov. We add them up in terms of the shiur of a chisaron. So let's take the case of a gulgolet. So suppose, remember that we were talking about the dinim of what parts, what skeletal remains will cause a tumas meis in an ohel. And so over there, we said one of the things that we had learned in the Ohelot, which we spoke about earlier when we were talking about which part of the spine, we were talking about Chisor and Beshidra, the machlokas between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. In that same Mishnah, we also have the question of a gulgolet. So if the skull was missing something, so then the question is, what if it has a bunch of holes? And there, we learned in a brisa that a gulgolet yeshba nekev echad aroch, or afilu yeshba nekavim harbe, say that you even have a lot of separate holes in a skull, you can add them up. But what shear do they add up to? It says over there, beferish, mitzarfim l'mlo magdeach. Now the shear of chisoren in a gulgolet, in a skull, is the shear of a brain surgeon's normal drill. So what a brain surgeon would use to be able to remove a piece of skull in order to be able to reach the brain. Remember, they were doing brain surgery as we know, all the way back in Mitzrayim and so on. So there was already an idea of a brain surgeon's drill. So whatever that shiur would be added up. But it does not go according to a role or anything like that. It goes, even the shiur malomakdea, since the shiur of a missing piece in a skull is the shiur of a drill, so then when you look at the separate holes, you look at what would add up to the shiur of the chisaron. If the shiur of the chisaron is a drill bit, so then you add up the holes and see if they're big enough to be the same as a drill bit. So given the shiur melo magdeach, melo magdeach min starfin, when we look at the tzirot, add them up, they're added up to that shiur. Now, why wouldn't that be true in the case of a kona? Because what we haven't learned yet is that besides the idea of a kona that has a slit in it, and the slit is defined by rov, there's also a case in the kona where there's material missing. How much would need to be missing in a kona, even if it doesn't cover an area of rov, to be considered to be the psul of the equivalent of nikva hakona, or kona that was chaser? Okanami, the shear is the size of an iser. So the iser was a very common coin, and that means that if it's a piece that's missing, it does not go according to rov. It goes according to the small coin that would define its psul if it was missing. So over here, if you've got a lot of little holes, why don't you add it up to make one big hole, and the size of one big hole is the size of that coin. So why don't we say that Hachanami, kiven de l'shiyur ki iser mitztarfim? We should be able to be mitzarefit to the size of an iser and not to the rov. So even if it doesn't cover the rov, it should still pass it. Rabbi Yirmiyah forgot something very important. He forgot that there's a tremendous difference between a hole that is missing material and a hole that is simply a puncture in which none of the material was lost, and the only thing that we have is a hole because we no longer have a connected area, but that doesn't mean any piece was gone. And therefore, he forgot Rabbi Yirmiyah asking this question about Melo Magdeach. Rav himself had explained that it depends whether these holes are holes that are just puncture wounds or are they actually missing something. So nikavim shiyesh ben chisaron, if there's something missing in the hole that's in the kona, so then enochinami, you're 100% correct, Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rav himself said mitztarfin l'keisa. Over there, you look at what the shear is of a chisaron. We haven't talked about the chisaron until just now. A chisaron in the kana is not the same thing as a nifsika of the kana, and there the shear is an iser. So enochinami, if we were talking about holes that are missing, then we would look at the shear of chisaron, and chisaron is the shear of a kiser. But you ain't bam chisaron. If you're talking about punctures and not missing material, then mitstarfim l'ruba. Then we've got a completely different situation, and they go according to the regular shear of a psuka. And therefore, when Rav Yehuda said before that it was like a sieve, he didn't mean that there was anything missing. He just meant that these holes were close together the way that the sieve has close together holes. That's all. In which case, Rav himself had already said what it was that Rav Yehuda had said. Omar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, how about if you have a strip of the actual length, along the length of the kona? What's the deal over there? I mean, it's not going around the kona, so you can't really look at it as the equivalent of a psuka, because it's not a psuka. We're going to see later on that actually, if you have a slit that runs down lengthwise of the kona, it does not passel, because it's constantly being held shut under pressure because of the neck on top and the pull on the bottom of the pulmonary system, the cloud. So because of that, how would we look at a strip along the length that was actually taken off? So you have a small belt of tissue that actually left a missing space. So now you've got a gap. So what is the shear over there? Nitla himena ritsua mitztarefet l'ke'isa. When we said the shear of the coin of an isa, we did not mean that it all has to be in one place. Since over here it's a chisaron, you add up the total area of the missing place, and even though it may be very thin, maybe it's only 1 millimeter wide, a strip that was removed. But since it's a chisaron, it adds up to the same shear that we would have had in chisaron, which of course is the shear of a keisra, as we've been explaining it. Now, there was a maisa. I can't get my recording to start. How about a question of which he didn't hear what it was that we said before, B'Shem Rav, and he asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, how about if there's mikvah kinafa ma? What would be the din? He hadn't heard the psak halachas that we had before, differentiating between a yesh b'chisaron and ein b'chisaron. So he asked, what would be the din if we have a lot of small holes? And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi told him, Marley, Hare Omru de Kavim Shieshbem Chisaron Mitstarfim the Kisur, and Shaimben Chisaron Mitstarfim Lububa. The klal was that if you're going to be talking about missing material, then Enochinami the shear is of a not a nikvah, of course, this is no psul of nikvah, but not even a tsiruf of nikvah into a slit, but rather a shear of chisaron. The shear of chisaron is, as we said, an iser. But if it's ein ba'al chisaron, so then it's actually the same shear as if it had been slit. And she'ein ba'al chisaron are mitstarfim l'ruba. Now, this is all very nice if we're talking about a large animal. What about if we're talking about a bird? I mean, you can't use shiurim like this, and the simonim are tiny. How could we be talking about the chisaron of an iser? So be'ufamai, what would be the din of a bird if you've got a lot of small chesronos, tiny holes, but each one of them was missing a little piece of tissue? Omer Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nachmeni, v'didim v'farshili minei de Rabbi Elazar, mikaplo u'minicho ha'pi ha'kana. Fascinating shear. What you do is you take a knife, make a scalpel, cut very carefully around the entire area that has these holes in them, so that you get the smallest possible flap of skin that contains all of these holes. Cut it in now in three directions and fold it as a flap over the actual breathing tube, over the kana, over the trachea. And then if it covers most of the airway, then it's considered to be a trepha. And if not, it's not considered to be a trepha. Omer Rav Papa, and there's a beautiful siman for this, because what did we use as the mashal for the holes one up next to each other? We used anafa. Anafa is a sieve. How do you make enough? Of course, we don't think about this anymore, but once upon a time, you had to make your nafas, and every child learned in camp how to make a nafa, the same way you learned how to make those little cute multicolored plastic belts. That's how you make a nafa. So the way you make a nafa is that you have these little, they use horse hair, horsetail hair. So you take the hairs that go around the frame, and you bend one over one direction, one over the other direction, all the way down, and then you put the other ones across the other. Remember, each one first one, then one from the other way, then one on the other way. You remember the old days in camp, right? So that's the way you used to make a nafa. And therefore, that's the siman for how to tell the size, because you do the same thing. You cut the little strip of skin and you bend it over as if you're making a nafa. So just an easy way to remember how it is that the shear relates to the problem. Now, how about another situation? How about where exactly this thing that you just did, which is that you cut out on three sides a piece of skin, basically you made a kind of a door that can be folded over the kana or into the kana, right? Now, suppose an actual door like that was cut in a kana. What would be the size? Because it's not missing material, but it's not properly connected, and it's not going across the kana. How do we measure that? Do we measure that as the shear of the chisaron? I mean, it doesn't make sense. It's not really a chisaron, is it? So do we measure it as a psuka? It's not a psuka either because it's going down. So how would we measure it? Omer Reb Nachman, interestingly, we use the same measurement in terms of the iser, but you're 100% right. It can't be the exact same shear as a chisaron because it isn't really chaser in the same way. What we look at is how would an iser fit through this door? Now, that means in order to fit through this door, if you're holding it as the coin facing you, it's obviously larger than the shear of the iser itself because it has to also fit through when the door is open. So that means it's not going to be a trefa unless it's large enough to allow an iser to go back and forth through the door, so to speak. So it still is connected to the shear of chisaron of an iser. Alon is feeling very sleepy this morning. It's still connected to the same shear, but in a slightly different way we measure it. How about if it's nistaka? So how about if it got cracked? So it was split along the length between the opening of the airways at the throat and all the way at the bottom, which was the entryway to the lung, which we're going to talk about the exact shearing. So how about if it went down its length? Omer Rav, afilo lo nishtayra bo lechulia achat lamala, lechulia achat lamata, kishera. So even if there was only one chulia, which is the simple meaning, of course, remember, is that this is a reference to those little pieces of metal in the dryer tube where the air is coming out, and this is one of the chulios, and that was one chulia on top and one chulia on the bottom, and that's okay. As long as there's something that's left that is strong cartilages and holds, well, therefore, as the animal stretches its neck and it's pulled down from the lungs, it's going to continuously be held up against the other side. And therefore, it is ultimately actually going to be able to regenerate because it's not under pressure to pull it apart, which is what happens when you've got a slit that is widthwise. This is a slit lengthwise, and therefore there is no pressure pulling it apart. Actually, the only pressure is to keep it together if the animal stretches its neck. And therefore, it's going to be hadar cholim. It's going to be something that regenerates, and those things are not considered to be treifas. So therefore, one chulia is enough. Rashi suggests that maybe the meaning of chulia here, since it doesn't really make sense that it should be defined by the actual chulias, maybe it means like the same thing a chulia means by tzitzit. So a chulia would be three times that you put the string around, we call one chulia. So maybe that's what it means, and the others learn of other ways. Fine. So they said this over, as we'll see, it's not Nogea because of this next piece. And so they said over what Rav said to Rabbi Yochanan that this is dependent on having a chuya lamal and a chuya lamat. And Rabbi Yochanan interrupts them and says, well, what is this? Chuya, my chuya, my chuya. This is what they used to have that song of, who was it? Me and Julia. It's got me and Julia down.
Me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Right. So, that's the schoolyard. I forgot who sang it. Just went out of my, forgot the group. So what's this Julia jazz? Julia, Julia. Who's talking about Julia? My Julia, Julia to come around. I feel it on the Steyrbell. The point over here is that if there's any length that is still left on top and bottom, you've got no problem of treifas. And then they told Rabbi Yochanan, oh, Rabbi Yonatan said the same thing. Now, Rabbi Yonatan had learned in Bava And then when he came there, Tzitzrah also would often say things that he brought along with him from Bavel. And Rabbi Yochanan was actually shocked because, remember, Rabbi Yochanan didn't think very highly of the way that they learned in Bavel. And so Rabbi Yochanan said, "You're kidding. Yadin Chavrin Bavloy Leferushik Ahai Taima? They have enough intelligence over there in Bavel to actually be able to say something that makes sense? I'm utterly shocked." But so, yes, it turned out that both in Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, they agree you don't need Chuliah. So now, let's talk about, we never talked about how far down you can go when you're doing Shechita. We talked about how far up you can go in terms of Agurama when it came to Bikana, but how far down is considered to be also Kana, and at what point is the Kana considered to be part of the Reya, part of the lungs? Now, what you have to know is when, if you take out the entire respiratory system, so you can just lift up out of the cow after Shechita, you can lift up the Kana with the lungs attached, and you can hold it up in your hand. It's often done in order to inflate the lungs and to check if there was any possible hole there. So what's often nowadays, they use like an inflation machine, but you used to just blow it up with your mouth like a balloon. You blow up the lungs and then you put it into a barrel of water and you see whether there's any leakages. So when you look at that, the kana continues down into the lungs themselves. And a lot of the kana is surrounded by the lobes of the lungs. And even before you blow it up, you can easily see kana continuing to come down. We're going to be talking about the various lobes of the lungs later. But up until what point would it be considered to be a kosher shechita? So Tana Rebbe Chiya bar Yosef, Kamei de Rabbi Yochanan, Kol HaTzavar Kulo Kasher L'Shechita. The entire neck is kosher all the way from the Tabaat Gedolah. Remember, we call the Tabaat Gedolah. We don't paskin like this because remember, but we learned out from Chanina ben Antigonos that he was Machshir, and then we had the Machlokas up to the top of the Kova, the Shipui Kova, what place. But in any event, certainly this part is not Lahalacha because we don't paskin that Hagroma is above the Tabaat Gedolah. You all with me? You remember all this terminology, I hope, right? So the Tabaat HaGedolah was that one cartilaginous ring that goes around the entire kana. That's only the top one that is right under the Shipui Kova. And so what this, ignore this part because the first part is not halacha. It's a big chumrah. But anyway, certainly from the Tabaat HaGedolah, Ad Kanfei HaRe'ah HaTachtona, until the lowest lobes of the lungs. Oh, my Rava, do not get confused here, gentlemen. We are not holding the lungs in our hands by the trachea. What we're talking about over here, when and this can become very confusing in different places. Many of the cases where the Gemara talks about up and down is in terms of an animal which is hanging by its legs for butchering purposes, and up and down is reversed. So when we say the lowest part of the lung, tachtona, what we mean is the uppermost. And when it says the lower, it's tachtona shahi elyona. So when the animal is hanging from its feet. So that means that this would be the upper part of the lung. If you're holding the lung by the trachea, so then this would mean that the very top lobe, which is the small lobe on the left that extends higher, that part of the lung can draw a line from that lobe across the trachea, and that's it. You can only shecht until then. Alon is still tired. My gosh, what are we going to do? We're going to have to give you something that's really good enough for a South African. You got any boost, Andy Gobbs? I can run into the kitchen. I forgot to share my boost with you today. I feel terrible. So, okay. So that I can't get this going. It's very disappointing. Apparently not getting any current here. Okay, so then don't get confused. You certainly cannot shecht in the area of the lobes of the lung, even though you're cutting the trachea, and it doesn't look any different than it does anywhere else. That is the end of the trachea. From that point on, the trachea is considered to be part of the lung. So if it's surrounded by lobes, it's part of the lungs. And over there, it will be trapha, even if it has just a puncture hole in it, because there it gets the din of a rhea. And remember that a shear of the rhea is the rhea shenikva, which means that even one tiny hole is enough to postulate. She'ani omer. Why do I say that? I have to explain that to you. The reason that I say that is that the kosher l'shchita tzavar is only kosher poshetet tzavara v'ro'a. Whatever is in the actual neck, when you're looking at the neck from the outside. So think about the situation. An animal is just standing. Now, most of that bottom part that we're talking about over here of the trachea that's going to be near the lungs is like way down. It's only when the animal now tries to reach with its neck something. So then that loose trachea is pulled up into the neck area. And then anything that would be part of the normal movement of the neck under circumstances like that is considered to be kosher l'shchita, even though it looks like you're shechting down underneath the neck. That part of the trachea is part of the neck, despite the fact that you're hitting it when the animal obviously is not doing much stretching. But it can't be that you're pulling on the neck. So if the animal stretches its neck, that's part of normal movement, and all of that is called trachea. The fact that you can pull that neck up and therefore get more of the kana in the neck area than would normally be there does not count to turn it into kana for makom of shchita. And that is not included, which is why I say that the upper part of the lung must be what's meant over here. Even though it says the lower part of the lung, it means the upper when you're standing, or when you're holding the lungs. This is going to create a lot of confusion for us, because whenever we talk about also right and left in the animal, we mean the right of the animal, the left of the animal, not right and left in terms of what we are looking at. What we are looking at when we're holding it, actually the left is the right and the right is the left. Your left and right would be the same thing it would be on your person. It's the animal that we're talking about, the animal's left and the animal's right. But we often refer to an area like we're going to be discussing the lobes of the lung, left lobes or right lobes. Those are actually reversed when you're holding the lung and looking at it from the point of view of underneath, right? Which is what happens when you're holding it up. So remember that the directions are actually reversed in terms of the actual definition of left and right. So don't get confused. Same thing is true when we're going to examine the heart later today's stuff. We're also going to be talking about left ventricle or right ventricle. There we mean the animal's left and right, not what you're looking at when you're doing a dissection. Okay, so when that's clear, this is what Rob is explaining. That's why I want you to understand that we're talking about an inverted picture over here, and top is bottom. Rabbi Hanina. Some say it was Rabbi Hanania. What would be if the animal can be unsa as atzma? So there's times that an animal will stretch to its maximum in order to be able to get some yummy fruit that something or something that it's looking for. What would be the din if it's not part of the normal movement, but it can be done if it really pushes? Is that the area of shchita, the part of the trachea that's pulled up? Or when you said, Rob, that mensa is not included, is unsa et atzma the equivalent of you pulling on it, and therefore it would be an ensa? What would be that then? So therefore, unsa atzma, asks Reb Hananya, Reb Hanina. Mao. So what would be the din? Teku, that we actually have to be machmer on, because we don't know what that halacha would be. Yossi, Rabbi Yochanan, very Shlokish, and Nafag Milta Beinayim. Rabbi Yochanan was sitting learning with Rish Lakish, and as often happens when people discuss things between the two of them in the course of the discussion, they came up with a couple of issues. Onas b'simanim v'shachad psulah, which is basically what we just learned. If the shaykhe pulls up the simanim, and now he's shechting in the tzavar, but only because he put so much pressure as to bring up the trachea this high, and then he shechts, that is not considered to be a kosher shechita, which is basically what Rava said before, that if the person, the shaykh, pulls it up, that is considered to be too much of a stretch, and that's where that terminology comes from. Oh man, that's a stretch. And this is exactly the Gemara that comes from. So that is a stretch, and that would be puzzle. And another thing was that Nikav Hakana Lamata Menachazet, what we've been talking about over here, is the place where the Kona is no longer Shaykh for Shchita. So what if it's beneath the part that would normally be in its place, even if the animal is stretching naturally, and there's a distance now between the end of the tzavar and the actual part of the trachea that might be up against one of the lobes of the lungs, right? Lower lobe, which we're calling the higher lobe. So what's the deal? The din is that once it's no longer a kona suitable for shechita, it is considered to be a rea, and it automatically gets the din of lung once it's out. Please mute. Gets the din of a lung once it goes outside of the area of shechita itself, which means that it would be pasul even with nikev, which it becomes much more chomer. Now, there's also a question. What is considered to be, you said, lamata menachazeh, below the breast? Well, what is considered to be the breast? What does breast mean anyway? Breast is just a piece of meat, isn't it? Ah, why do you need to define the breast? Not because you're working in a butcher store. You need to define the breast because of Barnea. Remember that the chazeh has to be given to Barnea. You want to have more of complaints, you can look at this week's parsha and make a whole list of 24 things to yell at him about. But anyway, one of those is the chazev eshok of a shlomin. So now, how much can he claim? That's the question. So which part of the animal is classified as the chazev, which is what you said, if it's lamata menachazet? So now it's really no gea, because there is a halachic definition of what we mean by a chazeh. So Tana Rabbanan, what defines the chazeh? Ezeh chazeh. It's the part beneath the neck that faces towards the ground. And therefore, what it means is you go up to lamata ad hatzavar and lamala ad hakeres. Again, we have our reverse directions over here. Here, we have to imagine that the animal is now hanging in the butcher shop, or it's going to be checked now in the Beis HaShechita, and we look at it in that way. So we call it lamata, downwards means upwards, the way we would normally look at it if the animal is walking, to the neck itself, and all the way up to the area that is kineged the rumen. So then that means that it's defined not by lung area, but by keres area. And you cut off the two small ribs on either side, which is where that piece, that cut of meat, what is that, Shmuel, what is that cut of meat called today? David, Solomon, and Shmuel, you're the Bikian.
You know, Rebbe doesn't mean the brisket?
And I think it is, God, I didn't want to say, because I'm not...
Without the ribs, it's a brisket. The ribs are ribs. I don't know.
Even the two small ribs, which is where it starts, you can pull it off the ribs. So is that all called brisket?
No, not the ribs. And I don't know. There must be a separate name for the ribs, but the flanks are the chazeh is brisket.
Okay. Okay, so they call, in Hebrew today, they call the chazeh brisket. Okay, so it's the brisket plus a little bit more. We wouldn't want to cheat Barnea. Okay, so that would mean that it would go all the way up to the two small tzla'ot. You cut those two small tzla'ot from either side, and that's part of what's given to the kohen. Question, machlokes, about, you know, whether we mean both of them or not. But anyway, it's basically a special piece, and it's not, even the halach, it's very interesting. Remember, we do use the chazeh as one of the netachim, right? And that's, we give that to a kohen. Where we define the netachim, it's not defined with the ribs, right? So over there, it really is pure brisket. It's over here that only bedavka benogea chaz v'sho given to kohanim, not the netachim of the oila, let's say. We wouldn't call the brisket, including the chazeh, including the tzla'ot. So here, we're chotek shtei tzla'ot, b'shtei tvanot, elach v'elach. That is the chazeh hanitan l'kohanim.
Well, it's very special, right? Because that's what they made pastrami and the corned beef out of, is the chazeh.
That chazeh, the real netachim.
Yeah, right, without the ribs.
Okay. That's very close to home because that's exactly what we had up here in Netanya for our Shabbos meal.
And it goes with mustard almost as good as the Lashon, right?
Yes, it does.
But Tosva says if the Kohen doesn't like mustard, he doesn't have to have it with mustard. I love this.
True. Am I to learn from there that Barnea is not a mustard fan?
I love mustard. I don't need it, but I love it. And we also had roast that for Shabbos.
Okay. Little did I know that I was in such a dear company. Gosh, should have told me before Shabbos. It would have added to my pleasure. All right. So now we're talking about our next piece, and that is Nikev Krum Shel Moach. Now, what's fascinating about the Krum Shel Moach problem is that it is invisible. In other words, the real Krum Shel Moach, a person who is not an expert, who's looking at a brain that has been removed from the skull, does not even realize that there's a membrane that's surrounding it. It is so thin that it simply looks like shiny tissue. And it's very hard to make it out. So the slightest nikev in it is considered to be a treif. Now the question is, the actual bone of the skull has a membrane underneath the bone, which should not be confused with the cranial membrane. It is actually attached to the skull, but it looks like the covering of the brain if you don't know what you're doing, because it's all the connection between the real cranial membrane and the membrane on the bottom of the skull is very hard to make out for a layman. So now there's another question. Remember that we spoke about before an important yesod, that anything which is a supporting structure of something that is essential for life is considered to be, if it gets a hole in it, and it's no longer going to be able to protect that which it needs to protect, then it's considered as if a hole was already made through what it was protecting. So therefore, since the cranial membrane itself is extremely sensitive, I have a feeling that Brucey might be falling asleep himself tonight. That would be terrible. Brucey! Welcome home. I don't know. Listen, you got to hand it to these special people that keep themselves on the screen, you know? Let's say Richie, he'll never show himself on the screen. Of course, that wouldn't be because he gets tired or anything like that. It's because of his coffee and porridge. Or maybe it's garinim. Okay, very good. We know you too well, Sir Richard. But it's nice to have your actual beautiful face there.
Listen, we can be forgiven. We are burning the candle on both ends.
So am I. Okay. So now, the question is, what do we mean by the Krum Shel Moach? Rav and Shmuel both said that even if what's called the karma ilah, the uppermost membrane, which is not technically speaking part of the brain itself, it's part of the skull. So that upper membrane, even if there's just a hole through that, so let's say somebody suffered a wound in the head and it punctured that membrane, leaving the cranial membrane intact, it would still be considered to be a real hole, a knee cave in the
perforation.
The reason is because, as we said, something that when it goes, the other thing goes, is the equivalent of the other thing going. And therefore, over here, once there's been a tear through the thick membrane, it's as if the cranial membrane was punctured. That's what Rav and Shmuel said. And some say that what it means is no. They said the opposite, and that it's not considered to be a hole through the membrane unless it's the real membrane. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmini. The way to think about this is, if you're looking at the chayta de mitnach be mucha, we're talking about over here the actual sac that encloses the brain. And that's what we're talking about. That goes all around the brain. The upper membrane does not enclose the brain. It's only attached to the skull. Ashenke, the cranial membrane, you can actually carefully pull out the brain from the skull and have it held together by the sac, so to speak, which is what he's referring to. The chayta, you have a sac that includes the brain. That's what we're talking about. Omar Rabba Barachana, Omar of Yeshua ben Levi. If you can't make it out, it's very easy to learn how to make it out. Take a testicle, and there you will very, very clearly see that we're not talking about a scrotum. Forget the scrotum. Remove the testicle, and you will see that there's two completely separate membranes that you can peel one from the other. There, it's easy to make out the difference between the attached membrane, which will be similar over here to the cranial membrane, and the part that is actually above it. So, kenegdo bebeitzim, nikar. So if you take apart a testicle, you can easily see these two membranes. Omer Rebbe Shimon ben Pazi, Omer Rebbe Yeshua ben Levi, Mishum bar kapara. Moach. Now, the question is, what is considered to be brain and what is considered to be spinal cord? Because there's no clear-cut differentiation between the brain and the spinal cord. Basically, all you've got is the same brain type of material, which is called the moach of the spinal cord. And this is like a braid of millions of nerve fibers. It's also the same type of neurons that you'll have in the brain itself, and it goes into the spinal cord. And the question is, at what point is it considered to be the brain so that it would be possible even with a nekuva? And at what point is it considered to be spinal cord, in which it's only the same as a nifsika, which is, of course, tremendous kula? How do we determine? So Reb Shimon ben Pazi said that Bar Kapara explained that the moach is defined as kol mashe bakidera, nidon kemoach. Anything that's inside the skull, known as the cranium, which is called, is considered to be brain. Once it begins to go outside of the actual cranium, itchilim shoch, nidon kechuta shidra. And this is easy to make out, although the Gemara is going to pinpoint the exact place, but it's easy to make out. If you remove the brain, you see very clearly the container for the brain, which is called the cranium, and that is the area that defines the moach for the din of nikev in of the membrane.
I sent a delicious picture on the group of it, which I think is quite accurate.
Okay, thank you. Umeichan matchili mashech. What is the technical tipping point, the precise point that it's considered to be spinal cord and not brain? The way to know it is kimon shnei polim yesh munachim al pi hakidera. Now there are these little polim. These little polim are like, they look like beans. And do you have a picture of that? That's a little bony structure that looks like a bean. And mina polim velifnim kilifnim, and mina polim velachutz kilachutz. These polim define that difference. So from beyond the polim, outside towards the spinal cord, is definitely considered to be not puzzle with a hole, only puzzle with a psuka, which is the din of the chuta shidra. And from the polim inwards, towards the cranium, it's definitely called moach. I don't know the halacha about the small area of the polim itself, so I can't give you the precise tipping point, but I can give you a very clear-cut simon for where I do know, and you'll have to be machmer on the other part, because I'm not sure what the din is. But the polim atzman, eini yodea, but I believe from mitzad asvara that it's considered to still be within the cranium, and that the polim mark the end of the bony structure of the cranium itself. Rabbi Yirmiyah, now all of this we've been talking about a behemoth, but Rabbi Yirmiyah carefully dissected a bird, and he found the equivalent structure, ashkach kamin shnei polim munachin al pi akedera, even of a bird. Now, moving on to the heart. So now you have to understand that the way that the Gemara sees the heart is much more simpler in terms of what the halacha is going to look like than the actual detail. And the reason for that is because, look, a cow's heart is very similar. I mean, it's just gigantic compared to a human heart. But a cow's heart is essentially a four-chambered heart, similar to a human heart. And as you know, I'm sure, there are those four chambers are split into two sides, very carefully separated to make sure that there's no mixing of oxygenated and deoxygenated blood, which would happen if there would be a hole. So now what you have over here is two opposite systems, because one system is pumping blood that is full of oxygen that has just come back from the lungs, and that's being pumped out to the body. That, of course, is under high pressure, and it's a large chamber, and it is therefore going to be much more noticeable because it's much more muscular and has to pump blood through the entire body under very high pressure. The other side does exactly the opposite, where the ventricle, which is the main pumping chamber, which is the lower part, the ventricle on what we call it, again, right and left is backwards, because we're talking about right and left over here. The real right and left of the heart is the right and left of the cow. But when we're looking at the heart, we're looking at it from the opposite side. So, you know, what we're calling the right is really the left. But in any event, the area that is pumping actually deoxygenated blood to the lungs, it's the exact opposite, because there what's going through the normally would be let's say what comes out of the side that is going to the body goes through the aorta, and those are arteries that are carrying oxygenated blood and then makes its way back through veins, which are bluish because they don't have oxygen in them, and those go back into the atrium, which is the upper part, and there it is once again, what we need is to get it into the lungs, so it goes into the atrium on the other side, is pumped deoxygenated to the lung. This is the pulmonary artery, but which carries deoxygenated blood. So it's literally two opposite systems, whether you're looking at the right side or the left side. Now, if you slice through a cow's heart, it's easy to mistake that what you're looking at is essentially one large chamber on the right and one large chamber on the left. And what you see is a lot of smaller parts, which are very confusing if you don't understand what the heart is doing, because you've got all of these valves that are making clear that are making certain that you don't have blood leaking back also between the different, the atriums and the ventrium and so on and so forth. So because of that, it can be confused, essentially, to oversimplify. So as Rashi puts it, there's a lot of like little chambers all around, but those little chambers are taking a look at where there are actual valves, and it looks like that's like a separate area. So we take a look at the main atrium, mixing it over here, looking at it as if it's actually the two atriums are the separate sides, and they're connected to the ventricles on those sides, and that's what it looks like in a simplified diagram. So therefore, when we talk about the din of Nikev HaLev LeBeit Chalalo, what is the Beit Chalalo precisely? Into its hollow. Is that the Beit Chalal Katan, or is that to the Beit Chalal Gadol? What do we consider this to be? And we were talking about, and basically as the Rambam defines over here in Hilchos Shechita, so we're talking about the left one, which is really the right one. We call it the left one, which is large, and the right one, which is small. And that is what we're calling left and right. So it often gets confused between the different preskim because some use the correct term right and left, and others use the facing the heart right and left. So which one is it? The Beit Chalal Katan, which is what's called the right ventricle, but which you're looking at it on the left, or the Beit Chalal Gadol, which is pumping blood through the aorta, and that is going to the body, to the entire body. What are you referring to? And Abaye said to Rabbi Zera, well, what's the problem? Maiti Ba'elecha. We have an equivalent terminology when it comes to the lungs, do we not? Milotnan, we learned in the Mishnah that we have the din of a nekuva. And it says over there that Rabbi Shimon explains, the din of the nekuva is only if the hole reaches to the Beit HaSampunot. So, it's the house of the bronchial tubes. And Rabba Bar Tachlifa quoted Rabbi Yirmiyahu Bar Abba saying that Rav explained that to mean that it has to get to the large bronchi. There's many, many small branches of bronchi, but the large bronchi that go to the two main lobes of the lung. That's what it's referring to. So therefore, since over there it means the largest, here too, it should mean the largest. And we should therefore talk about the area of the heart that is pumping into the aorta to avoid confusion of left to right. Says the Gemara, what kind of raya is that? No raya at all. What Rav said over there was based on the words Beit HaSimponot. That means all of the bronchi. It would be as if you're looking at the bronchial tubes as little rivers, and they're all flowing into this main river. Obviously, it's just a mushroom, and it's the opposite direction. But it's the place where all the rivers come together. So they converge on the large bronchial tubes on both sides. But it doesn't use Aloshan Rabim over here. It says Beit Chalalo. So it's obviously trying to single out one part. What is that one part? What is that chashuv part? And therefore, in not defining it, it doesn't make a difference to me whether it's going to be there is no place where everything comes together. And if it's Beit Chalal, they're both Beit Chalals. And therefore, Mali Chalal Gadol and Mali Chalal Katan. So therefore, if there's a hole into the heart that goes through into either side, it is going to be puzzle. Now, how about the Kanei Halev? So what this actually, and we're going to see, this is a very confusing part of the Gemara, because if you read Rashi literally, then Rashi is describing structures that simply do not exist. And it's very important not to read the Rashi literally, as I'll explain in a moment. So we have what is called the Kinei HaLev. The Kinei HaLev actually means the aorta. So we look at it as if it's the equivalent of a trachea to the heart. So this is a very large and extremely well-protected part of the heart. And as a matter of fact, in bovines, it's a much more noticeable structure because there's the bovine circulatory system is different from the human. There's no equivalent structure in a human heart or coming out of, I shouldn't say the heart, but in the circulatory system. But this is called, forget what they call it, I think it's called the bovine arch. So it's like a whole structure in which the aorta goes up and then it's supported and moves around. Anyway, that is that kana that we're referring to. So now the question is, what is the shear of a hole through the aorta? So Rav says the slightest hole in the aorta is kaputsky. Where Shmuel Amar, no, it would actually need to be berov because it can be easily sealed up by fatty deposits and so on, and you're not necessarily going to have blood spurting out of an aorta through a small hole. Okay, what do we mean when we say the Kinei HaLev? So Amar Rav Abar Yitzchak, Amar Rav, it means the fat that's on the Tefanot, which is insane. That makes no sense at all. The Tefanot usually mean the side of the animal, which has a lot of fatty deposits. How could it be the chalev on the Tefanot? What does that have to do with the heart? Tefanot, you can't mean that. Salka Daitach? That's ridiculous. How would that have? That has no meaning for the survival of the organism. No, not the Tefanot of the side of the animal. The Sha'al Gabe Gofnei HaRe'ah, what we're talking about over here, is the tube. I should say the it's actually a pipe because it's thick. So the pipe, it looks like fat that is up against the two separate lobes of the lung, and it is there close to the spine, and it looks as if, and this is why the whole thing is so confusing, because it looks like it's actually, it runs between the tefanes of the rea ultimately, but it actually is the aorta and not connected to the lungs.
Akiva sent a very good picture.
Who did?
Akiva.
Oh, okay. I could see it on my phone. Let's see. Okay, I don't want to waste time. Let's see. Akiva. Huh. Wow, a lot of people have sent pictures here. Ah, okay, very nice. Yes, excellent. So as you can see, the aorta runs right along, and this is where the confusion comes in with Rashi. You can see this very beautifully in this picture, where it looks like the aorta is connected to the kona, which is the trachea. You know, there's absolutely no connection between them, right? Take a look at that picture. He sent a very, very nice picture that shows what Rashi is talking about, which we're about to get to in the Gemara. Omra, Meimar, Mishmeder, Nachman. There are three different konim. Now, this is what causes the confusion in Rashi, because people read the Rashi to mean that these are connected and run into each other, which is ridiculous. There's absolutely no connection, but as you can see, it really looks like it's connected. So that's what Rashi is referring to. So we have these three branches, looks like branches of different, of a single pipe. But of course, they're not connected. So we have the kana that goes into the heart, which we just saw the picture that Akiva sent. And that is where the aorta runs right along the kana as it's on the lung. So one goes to the lave, which we just spoke about, which is the aorta. One of them goes to the rea, which of course is talking about breathing, and that has to do we said before, with the kana, once it's within the rea, it has the din of a rea, and its din is that even a nekev kosher is enough to passel it. So one goes to the heart, one goes to the lungs, and one goes to the liver. And the din would be, therefore, that they have the dinim of as follows. The rea, kirea, the one that goes to the lungs, as we said before, has the din of a rea, and at that point, it's nifsal even with the neck of kosher. The one that goes to the liver has the same din as the liver, and the din of the liver is that it can regenerate. This can also regenerate. The rea, the kavda, is therefore like a kavda, but when it comes to the din of the lathe, that's the machlokas that we just spoke about between Rav and Shmuel. So therefore, what Rav was saying is that this is the din, this is what he had. We're going to see that Shmuel was like very, very dismissive about what it was that Rav had said about all of this. And I think I might have skipped Knei Halev. No, did I say that? Yeah, no, I said, yeah. So Nachok is Rav and Shmuel. That Shmuel said that the aorta is also Berubo. And remember that Shmuel was one of the greatest, if not the greatest doctor of his times. And because of that, he allowed himself to be a little bit harsh with Rav's opinion, even though Rav, he considered Rav to be greater than him, but not when it came to medical issues, which he often says, if that's what Rav said, he don't know nothing about medicine. He don't know nothing about Shreifas. Okay, Rav said, we did pretty well. I was afraid we were going to be in really bad shape. So we've talked today about some very important shiurim in terms of the area of the veshet, the area of the kana that is considered to be kosher l'shchita, what defines a stretch, and what defines the ikur din. And then we moved on to discussing how we would do tsiruf also, if you have holes, and if you have holes that have missing material, the differences between chisoron and between nekev. We talked about that in various different organs. And then we talked about how to define the difference between a brain and between neuronal material that's part of the spinal cord. And what would be the difference is massive because the cranial membrane is puzzle even with a tiny hole. We also discussed what the difference is in terms of the upper membrane, which does not really surround the brain because it's connected to the skull, and the machlokas about whether that itself would be sufficient to be considered to be a hole in the cranial membrane. We spoke about the structure of the testicles, just the agav, because we wanted to talk about the two different levels of membrane. And then we spoke about the confusing way that the animal looks, in which the aorta runs along the kana. We spoke about the structure of the four-chambered heart of the cow. We spoke about I'm almost positive it's called the bovine arch, about the way that the aorta actually goes out of the lathe of the cow, which is much more noticeable than it is in a human. And we have this machlokas, which we're still in the middle of, binogea, the connection to the liver, and the way that these three different, completely different functioning things seem to be connected. So we discussed the different appearances of what looks to be like a convergence of various kanim, which is not really a convergence, as we saw, but it sure as heck looks like there's a convergence. So basically, we have to try to figure out what it is that we're looking at over here, what it is that the Gemara was referring to, and what it is that Rashi really means when he says these three things come together. They clearly don't come together in any way. And by the way, that's not just a hashara. Rashi himself makes that very clear later on in the sugya when he speaks about the fact that there is no possible way. We're going to see later on a sugya in which a needle penetrated, and according to what Rashi is saying here, it sure looks like these three things interrelate, and they don't. And Rashi says no possible way for a needle to go through the trachea and to work its way into one of these other areas. It couldn't have found itself in the kaved, even though it says over here, one of them goes to the kaved. So clearly, he did not mean to say that they literally converge and they're interconnected. There's absolutely no interconnection whatsoever. So what were we talking about? So let's go back to the Omer HaMeimar Mishmeder of Nachman so that we can look at this sugya again. And the Gemara again says, this is a very crucial Gemara, and it keeps being referred back to, so let's get it straight. Omer HaMeimar Mishmeder of Nachman, Tlata Kani Havet. There's three kanim, and that means what sounds like three tracheas, which, of course, is ridiculous. It means that there's three large tubes that are all interconnected on the surface, where they touch each other. One is the one that is Porish Leliba. So yesterday, we went through that. Akiva, I think it was, sent a beautiful picture. This is the reference to the aorta, and it actually runs right along the kana, it looks like, for a short, brief piece, where the kana enters into the lung, or slightly below that. So that's called the one that goes to the heart. Then there's the one that goes to the actual lungs, which is the trachea that we've been talking about. What we did not talk about yesterday is that chat porish lechavda. One of them goes to the liver. So what exactly is that a reference to? Because none of these cunning go to the liver that are connected. However, if you take into consideration that what happens is that the inferior vena cava actually goes, and that's the vein that carries the blood after it's been deoxygenated and used up by the organs. So it carries it up from the lower part of the body, and it goes right back, as we saw yesterday, to the right atrium, which looks like the left atrium does, as I remember all of that discussion yesterday, and that's where it is once again sent then to the lungs, and from there it becomes reoxygenated and goes back to pumped out to the body. Anyway, but the important point is where does the vena cava actually run? So actually, it really runs right behind the liver. Sometimes it even goes through the liver. It depends on the species and on the individual. And so because of that, it also collects the blood that is bereft of its oxygen that has been deoxygenated by liver processes, which goes through the hepatic veins into this inferior vena cava, and then goes running along the liver, the back of the liver, and goes right back to, as I said, goes back to the right atrium. So that means that it looks like it's all connected in that area to the kana from the lungs, and the kana, so to speak, the aorta from the heart, and the vena cava, which is a very chashuv, a central bloodway that's carrying deoxygenated blood, so it's a vein, not an artery. And the din of these are, as we said yesterday, the rea kerea, the kana that goes into the rea in that place. Remember, once it's below the area that it's no longer called the trachea, it gets the din of the lungs. And therefore, even a small hole, it has a din of the rea, and it's been nikuva. The kavda is like the kavda, and it is very, very makil there, because we said that the kaved has to be missing completely. Well, so here, too, if it has a hole in it, that's not going to create a din of treifas. And the liba was the machlokas that we had before between Rav and Shmuel. So according to Rav, even the smallest hole in the aorta is a treifa, and according to Shmuel, it's only a treifa beluba. And Mar Bar Chia actually had it, his way he was taught it was exactly the opposite, that the rea has the din of the kavda. So in the area where it's no longer considered to be, so this is exactly the opposite of what Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, between them, they were learning, and they said yesterday exactly the opposite of that, and he holds that actually the Reya is very kal, so in the area beneath the place where you'd be able to shecht, where no, it's no longer called the Kana, actually even Berubai, it wouldn't be considered to be a Trefa, and the Kavda, so which we're learning now, it's easy to remember that because it's the Vina Keva. So it's Keva, Kavda, sounds like the same thing. So that would be actually very chomor, and even a small hole. And then we had the Machlokas before about the lave between Rav and Shmuel. So this is, in a nutshell, the picture that we have over here, the very simplified picture, obviously, of surface, but appear to be surface into relationships, and to make it clear that if we actually find, we don't look for this because it's not very common, but if we would find any pagam, then these would be the dinim of those pagam. But generally speaking, in most of these cases, we paskin l'chumra. Now, also Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, and this is where we got up to yesterday, so before we begin the next one, yeah? Also Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, and he said over what Rav had said, kamei de Shmuel, that the aorta is considered to be a trefa if there's the slightest hole in it. And Shmuel said, Ihachi Omar Abba lo yada betrefas v'lo kum. If that's what Rav said, he don't know nothing about trefas because that's completely not true. So as we said, remember that Shmuel generally was very, very careful about Rav's smores, but when it comes to medical issues, and Shmuel was the top doctor of his times, and he therefore allowed himself to say that. Okay, Nishbar Ashidrap, continuing on from what we said in the Mishnah up until now, we got up to the point of the spinal cord. Now, even though it mentions the spinal column together with the spinal cord, really, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, it's the cord that's important, and that's the part that we're going to worry about. So now the question is like this. The truth is that, as you know, the spinal cord is many, many nerve fibers. It's like a vast cable of nerve fibers that, again, if you don't have the instruments to be able to take things apart and to be able to see all of the various fibers that it's composed of, it just looks like the same type of material, brain material. It's called moach, the same material from which the brain is constructed. And this idea would make you think that if that's the case, the only thing that's important in the discussion about the spinal cord is that the nerves themselves should be intact. We shouldn't really care about the carrier for these nerves, so that the spine itself, this is very well protected by the vertebrae and so on, that this would be not so nogea. But what's interesting is remember that when we say in trefes that the halacha is in general, that the protective material is viewed as, if it's missing, it's the equivalent of the loss of the actual item. And on the contrary, sometimes if you have the protective material, then we say that it will possibly recover and not be a trefa. So the very strange halacha in Hilchos Trefes is exactly the same when it comes to the spinal cord. Now, obviously, the spinal cord, if you cut nerves and so on, I mean, absolutely a disaster. You're going to end up with the person being a paraplegic, and this is all because of the nerves that are in part of the spinal cord. However, being a paraplegic is not the equivalent of being a trefa. And what's fascinating is that the din of the trefa, which would mean that the animal cannot live, is not defined by the spinal cord. It's defined by the meninges, which are essentially, you know, what meningitis is essentially an infection of the meninges, which is the covering. We talked about the covering of the krum shel moach. We distinguished by the krum shel moach. We only made a two-part distinction in reality. And if you're talking biologically, there's a three-part distinction. There's even currently discussion as to whether
there's an actual additional, almost invisible membrane, whether it has a din of a membrane or not. This is like a whole recent issue about the brain. But in any event, we made it very simple. There were those which are technically part of the membranes around the brain, which are attached to the skull. And this is a very beautiful structure where you actually have cushioning material, something like the bubble foam that they use to cushion things when they ship them. And then you have the actual sac, which we called the kuma tata, which is the as the Gemara puts it, it's the sac de manchaba mucha, because you can actually lift up the brain and hold it within this extremely delicate, completely transparent, very, very thin organic material that looks like an incredibly fine plastic that just covers, you could barely make it out. That's what we said before. But remember that we had the question about whether if the protective layers are broken, does that mean that it's considered to be the equivalent of the lower layer? And Adafka, on the other hand, if the protective layers remain, and we had this a number of times, if the Kruma Elyon in various places is intact, is that going to allow the Kruma Tachton to recover? We're going to have a lot of discussion about this today. So over here, the meninges are essentially the various sheaths around the cable. It's very similar to obviously much, much more complex. Then this is like comparing Bumblebee to a Boeing 747. A Boeing 747 is a very primitive and ridiculous bubblegum put together thing compared to a Bumblebee, obviously. But the ideas are similar. And you can obviously analyze those kind of things and see the similarity of the bubblegum, the Soviet Union sticking together their spacecraft as compared to things that really work, that evolution has worked out at much more detail. So we can compare this to one of these complicated telephone cables, where you see the various sheaths around them. So you've got the metallic part, you've got the plastic part, then you've got the serious, nowadays, of course, it's optical cables, but we'll talk about the old-fashioned telephone cable. And, if you cut one of those, okay, so you cut off that particular telephone. The same thing is true over here. If there's a cut through the actual sheath of the cable, then basically you're allowing in water and garbage, and the whole thing is going to collapse in no time. Masha Ein Kein, if you have the sheathing is intact, then you can open things up and replace a particular cable. So the same thing is true about the spinal cord. Obviously, the direct damage that's done to any one of these nerves is immediately noticeable, and it creates an immediate organic deficiency. But that doesn't mean it creates traphis. So the question over here is, if the meninges are intact, it's possible that the cord will actually continue to, even if it may not regenerate. There are places where there actually is nerve regeneration, as we find out more and more about, especially in other species. So if the meninges are intact, then it's possible that it's not a trepha. Masha Ein Kein, if the meninges are not intact and the cord is intact, then it might be that it is a trepha. And therefore, the Gemara strikes us as being rather strange. But if you think about it, it's not so crazy at all. So let's go into this halach. Nishbar hashidra, tana rabona, v'chut hashidra, shenifsak berubo. So if the actual spinal cord was mostly nifsak, all of nifsak is berubai. So here too, that would be the shear, divrei Rebbe. Rebbe Yaakov says, even if there was just a hole, afilu nikev, it would still be a trefa. Rebbe did not want to rely on his own shita, which held that it's only a din in nifsak, and when it came halacha lemaisa, he actually was meire like Rabbi Yaakov, and he was machmir that it was a trefa, even though it only had a hole. Omer Avuna, you don't have to worry about Rabbi Yaakov. We don't paskin like that, even though Rabbi himself paskin when it came to halacha. We paskin like Rabbi. So if Rabbi doesn't have the guts to stand behind what he said, we do. And we paskin like Rebbe, and it's only a psuk. But when you say ruble, what do you mean? Do you mean rove of the nerves, or do you mean rove of the meninges? That's the question. So kama ruble, rav amar rove ole. What it means is, even if there's no damage to the nerves, if rove of the covering, which are called the meninges, there's different layers of covering, if that's the cable cover, if that's cut, that's what defines it. And some say it's rov mocho. It's most of the nerve material. So the mandi amar rov mocho, surprisingly, would for sure agree that rov oro passes. Why? Because for sure, once rov oro is cut, there's no recovery. But the rov mocho may actually not deteriorate any further, and therefore it's not a trefa, which is necessarily on a death sentence. And question is, what about the other way? Suppose we look at rov oro. Is there a problem if the meninges are intact? Is there a problem if the nerves are not intact? Obviously, there's going to be a heck of problems, but is it a trefa if the nerves are actually cut? What would be the din? Tashma. Because Nivli quoted Rav Huna saying, Rubo she'amru is rov oro. We only care about the meninges. We do not care about the nerve fibers themselves. Moach zeh, lo ma'ale velo morit, makes no difference, and therefore it's not a problem. As long as things are not going to get worse, if the animal currently survives and the meninges are intact, so then it may be unable to walk, but it's not a treif. And we see this from Reb Nosson Bar Avim. The story was, Reb Nosson Bar Avim was sitting in front of Rav, and he was being bedek, and he was checking rov mocho. He saw that the first he was bedek rov oro, and he saw it was okay, and then he was checking rov mocho to see, to make sure that none of the nerves were severed. And Rav said to him, you don't have to look at that. If you've already checked out the rov oro, makes no difference what the current status is of the nerves themselves. If the animal is currently breathing, it's going to go on breathing. And it doesn't matter what pigamim it has because of the broken nerves. It's not a trefa and it can still survive. Omar Rabba Barbachana, Omar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. We do have to analyze what type of damage of the spinal cord would be actually a trefa. So, nitmarech pasur. Nitmasmes pasur. If the nerves in the spinal cord have actually become soft, so it's nitmarech, we're going to discuss what we mean by nitmarech, and if it's become nitmasmes, melted, we'll discuss what that means in a moment, then it's possible. Because this is a growing rot of the nerve fiber, and in the end, it's going to make it impossible for the animal to breathe. It's going to cut off entirely the brain from the body, and that's the end. So that, for sure, is considered to be a treif. Now, what do we mean by hamracha, and what do we mean by masmesa? You'll notice that the word masmes is similar to the hemsis, right? Because it's basically the hemsis, or the masas, is the area when mesisa takes place, the softening of the cut. So, anyway, so the shear is what? Hamracha is called shenishpach kikiton. So when we say it's hamracha, we mean it actually became liquidy. And that means that the nerves are rotting. And it's, you can pour it. It's actually, if you would cut through the meninges, there would be liquid coming out. Masmasa means that it's gelled. And it's ino yochol la'amot. If you hold up the spinal cord, it's just going to bend right over. So that means it's not liquid, but it's turned into a gel, and that is going to destroy the nerves. And there's no way in which it's going to be able to survive. By Reb Yirmiya, is this shear itself, is this shear definitive? In other words, if a spinal cord is held in your hand and it bends over, and you don't detect any liquefaction or any gelling. It's just that it's a very thick and heavy spinal cord, and it just weighs too much for you to be able to hold it up from the pressure of its own meninges. Would that be absurd? So suppose it's inu yochol la'amod mipnei kvedo. It's so heavy that you can't hold it up. What about that? Is that absurd? Take. We don't know about that. We only know about the shear of inu yochol la'amod when it comes to this understanding the hamracha or the amas mesal. Now, by Rav's Beis HaMedrash, they said it differently. Nitmas meis pasul, like we just said, so if it gelled, it's pasul. If it's nitmas meis, however, it's kosher. So nitmas meis, again, it's not quite clear what that is. It's going to certainly appear from the Gemara that follows that this is talking about a concussion. Actually, some really learned that this is referring to the brain and not referring to the spinal cord. We've gone back because basically we're discussing the same material. So nitmas meis would mean that it was concussed, according to some shitot, or it means, according to Rashi, that it was affected by a impact and some of the moach material has actually disappeared. So there's whatever it was that caused that. So it was nitmas meis. So here, Rashi is saying that if that happened, and especially those shittas that say in the brain, then the next piece of the Gemara makes perfectly good sense. If it's not in the brain, so then we're comparing the aspects of a brain concussion to an impact problem in the spinal cord. Again, a very recognized phenomena. And we have an actual event that disturbs us, because Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, behema shenitmas meis mucha is a treifa. And you said, according to Rav, that no, if it's nitmas meis, it's not a treifa. And there was actually, we're going to see, a maisa like this that has to do with the brain. But the Gemara says that case that you're bringing of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, you got it wrong. It should not say nitmas meis. It says over there nitmas meis, which we agreed that that was a treif. Really now? Well, I could tell you there was a maisa. So this was a very painful Gemara to one of the Talmidim in 74. I think that was it, right? Gabi was there. And his name was Joey Dayan. But everybody used to call Joey Dayan, Dane. That was just his nickname. And every time we got to this Gemara, everybody would laugh, because what happened was over here, Levi was once sitting in the mikveh, in the bathhouse, and he sees this guy, Chazya Lugavra, that slipped and he smashed his head. So he was Tarya Lureshe. And Levi said, oh my God, nitmas meis moche de Dane. This brain of Dane is gone to this day, of course, meaning just this guy. So everybody would always make fun of him. It must be smoke anytime you said something stupid. So what did Levi mean when he said, oh my gosh, this poor guy's brain is gone? I mean, didn't he mean that he's going to die? No, not necessarily. Omar Abaye, no. He might simply have meant, Lomar she'eno moli. He's not going to be able to have children because what he was saying is that the chut hashitra goes through the gid hanasha. The gid hanasha ends up in the genitals, and therefore this guy won't be able to have an erection because he's damaged now the connection to his brain. That's all that he meant, maybe. So it could be that nitmas meis would actually be not a treifa, like you said. Again, if you're learning like Rashi, we're making a leap, and we're assuming that whatever we said the din was, lagabe, the halacha of the brain, would be similar to the moach, which is a similar content of the spinal cord.